Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know, Dory, I am very interested in personal style and figuring out what my personal style is. But I also really appreciate having some guidance in this area. You know, like fashion, I feel like is one of those things that people just kind of expect you to know what your innate style is.
Totally. Yes.
And that's not always the case.
No.
Which is why I have turned to my favorite place, Masterclass.
Yay.
Now, look, we all know that with Masterclass, you can dabble in new skills and learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. Like, if you want to learn how to use your voice as an instrument from Mariah Carey, that is a thing you can do.
Amazing.
Can you imagine if when you were in high school, someone said, hey, you could learn a voice from Mariah Carey? I wouldn't believe them.
No, I would not either.
It's possible with Masterclass. But the reason I bring up fashion and style is because they have a fantastic beauty and personal style section that I have been slowly working my way through. Two people in particular have been my guides. Tan France, who has a class called Style for Everyone, and Carla Welch, Building and Owning Your Personal Style.
Ooh, yes.
This has been very, very influential and helpful for me figuring out who I am as a dresser.
I love this.
And Dory, sometimes I do it while I'm getting dressed.
Oh, okay.
Because that's how easy and accessible Masterclass is. And like, it's not even necessary to sit down and consume a full class from start to finish. You can go at your own pace. Do it when it works for you. The material is super easy to access, whether I'm on my laptop, my phone, or my TV. They have a new audio mode so I can listen in my car or while I'm traveling. And right now, Forever 35 listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/F35. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/F35. That's masterclass.com/F35.
Hey everyone, we are off this week, but we are replaying some of our favorite episodes. And today we are going to be replaying the episode that we originally aired in September 2019 with Vanessa Marin. So enjoy the episode.
Well, hello there, and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I am your friend, Kate Spencer.
And I am Dory Shafrir.
Whoa. Not a friend?
I mean, I don't know if they want to call me their friend, they can. I just don't know if they want to.
You don't want to make the presumption that you're a friend.
Yeah. I mean, I'm happy to be their friend.
Well, look, whether or not we're friends, we're not experts.
No.
But you and I are friends, and we like to talk a lot.
About serums.
We do, Dory.
Yes.
Am I glowing yet?
You are.
Is my Augustinus batter cream turned me into just like a lightning bolt of something?
I mean, your skin does look supple, but I feel like it always looks supple.
I think so far, I'm 1 week in.
Yes.
I look the same.
I gotta say, I think I don't see a huge difference.
There is no. I am having lots of acne. This is before the cream. Under on my neck, I'm having neck zits all of a sudden. Neck-ne. Huh. Maybe that's just what being 40 is all about. The zits move from my chin to my neck.
That's probably what Nora Ephron meant when she said, I feel bad about my
that's
neck.
Probably what it, that is what it's about.
Yeah.
She had neck-ne.
She had neck-ne.
How are you doing over there?
You know, I'm doing okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Good. I like to hear that.
We traveled with Henry for the first time.
And?
It was okay. He did great in the car.
What a dude.
Which was like, thank you, what a dude. Because like, I can't imagine anything worse than a screaming baby in a car for 4 hours.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. So he was like pretty chill and slept a lot, which was great. But as you know, traveling with a baby is a, even on a, with a great baby, it's a shit show.
It is a shit show. Even traveling, I traveled recently with my kids and they're fully functioning, like can carry their own backpacks kind of people. Still a shit show.
Yeah. So I was like, all right.
It's different.
I'm never leaving the house again. That's it. I live here and I don't leave now.
Which is fine.
Totally.
Your house is great.
Yeah, thanks. My house is great, but it's also, once again, the clutter is just, it doesn't stop.
I'm actually dealing with this at my house as well, where I feel the walls closing.
That is how I feel.
Yeah.
That is exactly how I feel. I feel like it is a weed that just keeps growing back.
And you pull the weed out and then two new weeds grow?
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about this. Because you and I, we've both expressed this as a challenge for us. What do you think is a plan we can implement to actually really make a difference?
I think that it is every night we do a cleanup, a 10-minute cleanup.
A cleanup of the whole, like, so is your theory just that you need a small thing every day to organize the space and put it back together almost?
I think so. For me, the big issues are the living / dining room. Especially the dining room table.
Oh, that's a big one.
Just becomes like a repository.
Yep.
And then also my desk has I just like put a pile on the floor.
I just went to look at Dory's desk, which is to my left.
And yeah, it's just, it's not even that Henry has so much stuff in the common areas of the house. It's more that like, he has a yes space that now takes up a third of the living / dining room. And so I think between that and just our stuff, it's just feeling very claustrophobic. And so I think that, and I just, when you asked that, I just thought of that right now, but I know this has been recommended by other, I've seen people like recommend this, that like every night you just do a kind of like quick cleanup, not like a deep clean, but just like a tidying.
I aspire to do that. And some nights I do. I have just found that the end of the day for me, in addition to doing bedtime with my two children and getting them homework and blah, 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 blah. Then once they're put away in their respective beds, there's dishes.
Yeah.
There's lunches. There's like wiping down peanut butter off the floor. There's just that. And then the thought of like then doing a 20-minute cleanup.
So maybe it's not, I mean, maybe nighttime isn't the right time for
you. Well, I had a fantasy of rising this morning and cleaning up my space.
Mm-hmm.
And then that did not happen. I slept until 7. I didn't do it.
That's fine. Also, maybe it doesn't have to be 20 minutes. Like maybe it can be, you know, you set a timer for 5 minutes. We've talked about this before.
We have too. I mean, there are solutions. The challenge, I mean, for me personally, the challenge is that I have 50 spots in my house that need to be organized.
Yes,
like
same.
Like yesterday, I did one cabinet in my kitchen and I was like, well, this feels nice. Every other cabinet in my kitchen, it's like filth.
Yeah.
Open bags of grains and like bags and just it feels like, I know it's like little steps will lead to the whole thing being done. But right now it just feels like everywhere it's like I'm just keep shoving the things in and
totally
the door doesn't fully close all the way and I'm hoping nobody notices.
Totally. And I was actually thinking about this before you came over because I was trying to clean off the dining room table just because I was like, oh my god, A, this is embarrassing, B, like we have to eat our lunch. We ended up eating lunch on the couch, but I was like, there's nowhere to sit at the dining room table. So I was like clearing it off. I threw out a bunch of stuff, but then there was just like a small pile of the like, this is stuff I think we need to keep, but it has no home.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I do.
There's like, there's those stray things that have no home. And I feel like those are the things that just accumulate.
Yeah. And then you create a home and then you end up putting 50 different things into that home. Like I created a home for like papers, but yeah. Now it's just like there's batteries and it's like a giant stack.
And anything that is like a miscellaneous home is a disaster.
I would love, listeners, do you have a system? What's your system?
What is your system?
Have you solved this?
Show us your ways.
Please, we both need deep guidance in this front. And maybe, you know, maybe it's time we have an organizer on the show.
Yeah.
We've tried.
We were going to.
Yes, but
didn't work out.
Yes, they had to not, they couldn't do it.
They had to not do it.
They had to not do it. So we are still in the mark. I think that would be very helpful to talk to a professional, but also talk to non-professionals who have just implemented some sort of system. Doesn't need to be perfect. Doesn't need to be good.
Like I've had organizers before. I know in theory.
Totally.
What you are supposed to do. Like with like, you know, just like all those sort of like organizer buzzwords. I know how to do them.
So maybe we need.
But it's just the implementation. It's the maintenance.
Right. It's the every day. Because you can purge.
Totally.
And you can reorganize.
Yep. And
for
you can have
a day.
Yes. You can have a cabinet look great for a day.
You can buy all the bins.
Yep.
But then realistically. Real life. Yeah. Yeah. What happens a month from then? Mm-hmm. It's like after I clean my car and I'm like, I've done it. It's clean. We're going to be organized. And then like 2 weeks later, there's a banana rotting under my butt. You know?
Hate that.
I hate a butt banana.
Me too.
There is currently a banana rotting somewhere in my car.
Oh, God. You know? That was always like in school. I feel like I always had a rotting banana in my backpack.
Oh, gross. Totally.
You know?
Totally. Well, we'll get there. You know, it's also hard. It's hard to balance work and life and then keeping your spaces organized.
Yeah.
But I would love to know how listeners do it.
Yeah. And it makes me feel like I'm not quite a grown up.
Oh, totally.
You know?
Yes. I 100% feel that way. Like when I barely make my bed and I'm like, I look like this is like I'm in high school. While we're on this topic, can somebody tell me how to store pots and pans and frying pans in two drawers that I have in my home?
I don't know. We have a pot rack.
Oh, that might be an interesting. I don't know where that would go in my house. I mean, not like anyone here is sitting in my kitchen, but like I literally just keep cramming pots into this drawer and hoping it shuts.
You know, we have a pot rack because we didn't have enough storage, but I actually kind of like it.
Okay, I'll take a Googling on that.
Because then your pots and pans are just sort of like in front of you, and they're easy to access.
Okay.
And then I got one of those lid organizers, and I stuck it on top, so all my lids are on the top.
I'll check out your pot rack when we're
Why
done
don't you
here.
Look into that?
Yeah, a pot rack. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Speaking of pot.
Oh, I see what you did there. That's a real me move.
Oh, I know, right?
I like it.
A lot of puns happening. I went to see Phish.
You sure did.
My favorite band.
Did you get high?
No, not really, no.
Okay.
I did have one beer and the altitude in Colorado, which is where I was so intense that I was like, I'm hammered. But I had a great time and I did dance.
Oh, amazing.
The night away. I love
with
Phish.
Thousands of your fellow
my
Phish
people.
Heads.
I love Phish so much. I love being a Phish fan for 25 something years.
That must feel good.
It does. Like it brings me such freaking joy. It was the best anyway.
And you're wearing a crossover Phish Red Sox t-shirt today.
Really on brand for the thing, my hobbies. But can I tell you something?
Yes.
I think I have a hobby.
Wow.
I've been making friendship bracelets.
Wow. Wow.
For the fun of it. Like
wow.
To give my kids.
That is
and then
a hobby.
Maybe to make one for myself.
Are you wearing
this
one?
Is my wristband from the Phish show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Not yet. Well, I have to give one to each of my children, and then I was going to start making them for myself.
I love it. It seems very therapeutic.
It's calming.
Yeah.
It's soothing in the way that I think people who do like cross stitch and sewing and knitting find that to be soothing, but I can't do those things.
Yeah.
But I can like tie two knots on a string and then go on to the next string.
Yeah. Are you doing like patterns?
I did a chevron pattern.
Ooh.
And I was really proud.
Oh my gosh, Kate.
I've never done that before. So I'm going to try to learn some patterns.
Cool.
If anyone wants a Kate Spencer friendship bracelet. I mean, okay, Dory. I don't want to force one on you.
Raising my hand.
Okay, I'll get you one. I'll make one in very Dory colors.
Oh, good.
Like gray, black. Maybe a gentle, like a rusty orange.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a Dory color.
Now you're talking. Yeah. Wow, that's very exciting.
Yes.
And you're doing it with your daughters.
I was doing it with them. My 8-year-old actually figured out how to do a very basic one. My 6-year-old is just braiding the strings and then getting frustrated. Okay. But that's fine. Like,
that
I don't.
Totally fine.
But I was going to make them each one because they're kind of into all that. Mm-hmm. What's old is new again, Dory.
Yes.
Chokers
Are
and
they
friendship
playing
bracelets.
Jacks?
No, Dory, not
do
that.
Do kids play jacks anymore?
I don't, unless it's on an iPhone. I mean, my kids don't have phones, but I'm talking about like teens. I don't think children play jacks.
Let's bring jacks back.
Did you play jacks?
Yeah, camp.
I never played jacks.
It was like a rainy day activity.
Really?
Yeah, we would like sit in the bunk and play jacks. Do I sound like I was born in 1910?
You do. You do sound like if my mom was my podcast co-host. Yeah, you do. I have a question for you because you made a note of something here in our show notes, which is that you took the Twitter app off your phone.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
What made you decide to do that?
You know, I was just sort of like, I don't need to be looking at this all the time. This is not serving me. And then I'd taken it off my phone, but I still had it on my iPad. And then I was like, no, I don't need it on here either. And the way that my Twitter is set up, I have 2-factor authentication turned on. And I have to generate a code using Code Authenticator on my phone to get into Twitter. So I can't even, like, if I'm on my iPad in the bedroom and I try to get to Twitter through the web, I can't because my phone's in the other room. And I'm like, oh, all right.
That's great.
So that's been good. So I've been checking it like maybe once a day on my computer. And sometimes I've just been like forgetting to check it and it feels good.
Cut it loose.
Yeah. And then when I do go into it, it's that thing that always happens when you haven't been on Twitter for a while. It's like you're entering mid-conversation.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. It's like you rolled in at a party.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everyone's talking about the thing and they've already like made the initial jokes about the thing. And now we've moved on to like the third or fourth stage of the thing. There's like the backlash and the backlash to the backlash.
And you're like, what's the thing?
Yeah. We're like, where are we in the outrage cycle on this thing? And then I'm like, wait, what are we even talking about? What are people mad about? And then I'm like, this is exhausting. And I close out of it.
That sounds like a healthy choice.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Wait, and you have been getting very into something that I am very into.
I've turned into you. Maybe you took Twitter off your phone, which is a thing I would do.
Oh my God.
And I now can't stop buying things secondhand online.
Yeah. Welcome.
Whoa. I am trying to be more conscious of my consumption, meaning not buying things new. Whether it's fast fashion or slow fashion.
Yes.
There's so many clothes already out there, things that I like and I want.
Totally.
So I am really trying, and I have to do this with my kids too, is buy secondhand.
Yeah.
I have also been, as a part of this, selling things.
Yes.
On Poshmark.
Yes.
So I'm slow going at it. I will share my Poshmark name if anyone wants to buy some size 11 shoes.
I mean,
you're out there, right? My size 11 friends. But I am just starting to kind of put things up on there and learn the ropes and learn how people, because there's it's like a whole system.
Oh, it's a whole system.
Yes. And I don't know the ins and outs.
Yep.
I would love to be able to commit to fully shopping that way. I don't know if I can.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in exploring it more. The same way that I'm doing my meatless meals. You know what I'm saying?
You know what I think, what I try to do, which is, this is just a rule I've made for myself.
Go on.
I try to find the thing secondhand. I always look for the thing secondhand first. Does that make sense?
Sure. Like, you need a new pair of shorts. I'll go look secondhand.
If I can't find anything, then I will buy it new. But I feel like I always just want to do my due diligence.
That's great.
To find it secondhand.
I mean, the next step that I am genuinely curious about that I don't think I would ever do is making our own clothes.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about that?
Yeah. I used to like want a sewing machine. And then I was like, where am I going to put a sewing machine?
Well, and let's not add, we just rattled on about our clutter.
Exactly.
I used to make my own clothes when I was like a full on patchwork fish follower. I mean, I'm still a fish follower, but I don't wear patchwork pants anymore. But I used to sew my own clothes.
Oh, that's awesome.
But I actually just bought a shirt off of Poshmark from a woman I follow on Instagram. And
I'm loving everything about
this. She made it herself.
Oh,
and I
cool.
love the cut. I love the style. I love the material.
That's
I thought
awesome.
That was really cool. Yeah.
That is very cool.
I'll send you.
Send me her info. Send her deets.
I believe her handle on Instagram is This Mom's Gonna Snap.
Oh.
She's a photographer.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yep.
I like that.
Yep. She's a good follow.
So let's take a short break. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking about sex.
We are going to talk about all kinds of boning.
Yes.
That's also sex. That's what I call sex boning.
Yeah.
Can you tell I get nervous talking about sex?
Sex, 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 sex.
Oh my
sex,
God.
Sex.
Okay.
Okay. BRB.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You know, Dory, I am very interested in personal style and figuring out what my personal style is.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really appreciate having some guidance in this area. You know, like fashion, I feel like is one of those things that people just kind of expect you to know what your innate style is.
Totally. Yes.
And that's not always the case.
No.
Which is why I have turned to my favorite place, Masterclass.
Yay.
Now, look, we all know that with Masterclass, you can dabble in new skills and learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. Like, if you want to learn how to use your voice as an instrument from Mariah Carey, that is a thing you can do.
Amazing.
Can you imagine if when you were in high school, someone said, hey, you could learn a voice from Mariah Carey? I wouldn't believe them.
No, I would not
possible.
Either.
It's possible with Masterclass. But the reason I bring up fashion and style is because they have a fantastic beauty and personal style section that I have been slowly working my way through. Two people in particular have been my guides. Tan France, who has a class called Style for Everyone, and Carla Welch, Building and Owning Your Personal Style.
Ooh, yes.
This has been very, very influential and helpful for me figuring out who I am as a dresser.
I love
and,
this.
And Dory, sometimes I do it while I'm getting dressed.
Oh, okay.
Because that's how easy and accessible Masterclass is. And like, it's not even necessary to sit down and consume a full class from start to finish. You can go at your own pace. Do it when it works for you. The material is super easy to access, whether I'm on my laptop, my phone, or my TV. They have a new audio mode so I can listen in my car or while I'm traveling. And right now, Forever 35 listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/F35. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/F35. That's masterclass.com/F35.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave, it's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30+. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like, zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Our guest today is Vanessa Marin. Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. We're just going to read your bio and then we'll get right into it.
We are going to get down.
Oh, yeah. Vanessa Marin is a licensed psychotherapist specializing in sex therapy. She has bachelor's degrees in human sexuality and sociology from Brown University and a master's degree in counseling psychology. She writes for the New York Times, Allure, and Life Hacker, and has been featured over 1,000 times in major publications like Oh, the Oprah Magazine, Harper's Bazaar, Refinery 29, and Real Simple. Vanessa specializes in online programs that help you transform your sex life from ordinary to extraordinary, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Through courses like The Passion Project, A Couple's Blueprint to Rediscovering Desire and Reigniting the Spark, and Finishing School, Learn How to Orgasm, she finds immense joy in spreading the message that we all deserve more from our sex lives.
And woo.
Amen.
It's always funny to hear your own bio read back to you.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
So why did you want to get into this line of work?
So it all traces back to one very specific memory. It was my parents trying to give me the talk. So I very clearly remember it. We were in our minivan cruising home from grandma's house after our weekly family dinner. And my parents looked at me. It was my mom was driving, and she looked at me in the rearview mirror. And she asked me, "So do you have any questions about, you know?" And I knew that she meant sex. And I also knew very clearly in that moment, despite the fact that I was maybe 11 or 12 years old, I knew that she was asking me if I had any questions, but really she did not want me to ask any questions.
Right.
And yeah, so I just have this super clear memory of thinking, why is this so embarrassing? Why are my mom and dad so embarrassed to talk about? I did have a lot of questions at that time. I was starting to hear things on the playground, and you know, and I had a close relationship with my parents too. So it felt really strange for there to be this topic that was very off limits. So I just remember even from that experience thinking, you know, this isn't something that we should be so embarrassed about. Why can't we talk about it? Why can't I ask questions about it? And that really has been the foundation of my entire career. It's just like, why can't we talk about it? Why can't we talk about it in the same way that we talk about what we're having for dinner or what we're going to wear the next day? So that's what I'm all about now.
Nice. I love that one conversation kind of led to this lifetime of
interest,
exploration, a whole career.
Cool. Yeah, so now my parents say that they don't feel so bad about really flubbing their first attempt.
They're like, we did it on purpose. Yeah. We knew this was your calling.
Yeah, they're kind of proud about it now.
And what has been your experience when you talk to people about sex, sex therapy, sexuality? I feel like we still are so, I mean, I can still feel myself, a 40-year-old grown up with two kids who has had sex, feeling shy talking about it. I'm curious what people's reactions are and how you kind of encourage openness about the subject.
Yeah, I think most people would share your experience. You know, a lot of us feel really shy talking about sex and we feel embarrassed. And even if we understand, hey, sex is something that's normal, everybody does it. I obviously, you know, I have two kids, so I obviously have done it. You know, even if we get rationally that we shouldn't be embarrassed, the actual experience of it still winds up being very embarrassing for most of us. So that's why, you know, so much of my work, regardless of the specific topic that we're talking about or the challenge that I'm helping my couple clients solve, it really just comes back to let's get started with making these conversations more comfortable. So the way that I approach it is, one, just kind of giving that same sort of reassurance and validation like I just did, that this is hard for everyone. And I talk about a lot of my own experiences as well. And, you know, times that I struggle to talk about sex or to vocalize what I want or, you know, give a piece of feedback. So I try to normalize it in that way. And then I also just try to use a sense of humor with it too. I think sex, you know, we take sex very seriously, but at the same time, I think sex is really funny. And so I just try to bring a sense of humor, a little bit of a sense of lightness into my work with my clients. And I think if I can get them to just giggle a little bit about how silly it is, then that can help lighten up the situation too.
Well, should we get to some questions from our listeners?
We have so many that I feel like we should
delve
in. This is a topic that our listeners have asked us to get into for a while. So we're really excited to pick your brain. We opened questions to our audience up on Instagram, and the two biggest ones were about low sex drive and how to get it back. And so let's just maybe start there. So many people want to know, a lot of people are struggling with low sex drive, period, all the time. Mm-hmm. For some people, it seems to be that they're in a relationship for a while and they're struggling with their sex drive. We had a lot of people ask about, after having children, how to get their sex drive back. When someone comes to you and is like, I want to be interested in sex, but it's like literally the last thing I'm interested in right now, how do you work with them? What do you tell them?
Yeah, I'm so excited that this is one of the main topics that came up, because this is one of my absolute favorite topics to talk about. So the first essential message that I start with whenever I'm working with sex drive is this idea that our sex drive isn't something that happens to us. It's something that we have to create. And so I think the issue that comes up for most people is we're kind of sitting around like waiting for this sense of desire to just strike us like lightning, like out of nowhere. And for the vast majority of us, that's just not how our desire really works on an ongoing basis or on a frequent basis. Maybe every once in a while we feel that. But the majority of the time, we're tired, we're overwhelmed, we have a million other things on our plate, and it just doesn't feel like there's the space for that to happen. So I really like to start with this idea that it's not something that just happens to us. It's something that, if it's important to us, that we have to create. So we have to think about, what do I need to do to get myself in the mood? What kind of context do I need to have in place? What kind of relationship do I need to have with my partner? What kind of specific things do I need in the moment? So it just opens up this huge world of possibilities if we can get ourselves to start thinking about it in that way.
Can we keep going? So like, what would a conversation, say I have a low sex drive, but I'm embarrassed to talk to my partner about it. How do we open up that conversation? How do we do it in a way that feels also like we're not insulting our partner? I feel like so much there's this like weird feeling, hurt feelings that can come into it.
Yeah. So I think what we need to start with is, first of all, recognizing like your partner knows what's going on. I think a lot of times we're hesitant to talk about sex with our partners, but the reality is like your partner's in that sex life with you. They understand that, hey, it's been a really long time since we have sex, or we, you know, just don't have sex that regularly. So I think it would just be starting with opening a conversation about, hey, you know, our sex life just isn't where I would like it to be. And I have a sense maybe that it's not where you'd like it to be either. And I know that this is just a challenge that so many couples have. You know, we're both really tired all the time. We do have a lot of stuff on our plate. We've got all these responsibilities. We have the kids. You know, I know that there's a lot that feels like it might be stacked up against us, but I want to get a sense of how can we work together as a team to make sure that our sex life is something that we continue prioritizing and making the time and the space for. So I really like that idea of approaching it as a team and thinking about what can we do together? Because I think very often the person with the lower sex drive ends up feeling like there's something that's wrong with them, that they're kind of broken in some way. You know, why do I not ever want to have sex with my partner anymore? And they'll usually take this sense of blame upon themselves, and that can feel even more stuck. Now you have one more thing that you're overwhelmed about. Now you're the broken partner too. So I think if you can turn it around a little bit and talk about it as, what can we do as a team to make sure that we continue prioritizing our sex lives? And then I think that's where we get into a lot of the other, we can kind of talk about it in a more practical way. Like, what are the things that are getting in the way of our sex life? And what are the things that we need to add more of? So I like thinking of it in that two-pronged approach. So I sort of think of our sex drive as having like a reverse mode and a drive mode. So the reverse mode are the things that like actively pull us away from sex. They, you know, create blockages for us. They actively make us be not in the mood. And then the things that put us into drive mode are the things that get us going, that make us excited about sex, make us open to sex, enjoy sex, all of that kind of thing. And so I actually think it's better to start with identifying the blockages to your sex drive first. We got to clear that stuff out before we can work on adding new things to your sex life. So if you take a look at, okay, what might be putting me in reverse? Maybe it is that I'm exhausted all the time. So maybe that opens up some bigger conversations of, okay, what kind of stuff is on your plate right now? What can we delegate out? What can we say no to? How can we make sure that you're sleeping more? How can we be a better team and you know, divide and conquer a little bit easier. So maybe that's something. Sometimes I work with clients and there's really practical stuff. Like we feel like we actually don't have very much privacy to have sex. And so sometimes it's really simple fixes like, can you put a lock on your door? Can you get a little sound machine so you can play some white noise? That kind of stuff. So taking a look at the reverse mode first and then taking a look at the drive mode after that.
Okay. So once you're in the drive mode, this is a question we got from a listener. What are some instructions you can give to your partner about touch and sensation without sounding like air traffic control?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Okay, so first of all, I think that most of us are really hypersensitive to how our feedback is going to be heard. We're much more sensitive to it than our partner actually is sensitive about hearing it. So especially for female clients, a lot of my female clients will just agonize over the exact right way to share something with their partner. And the reality is when I talk to the partner, they're like, oh, I just want to know more about what's going on for her. You know, like I want to hear more about what she's experiencing, and they don't really need to hear it in this exact perfect way. So I'll sort of couch that in that idea first, is that we don't need to be quite as nervous, I think, about delivering this kind of feedback. But one way that you can talk about giving feedback in a more playful way is like turn it into a game and pretend with your partner that you're just like curious about something. You want to explore something like, hey, I wonder what it would be like if we tried this. I'm really curious about, you know, like having more kissing in our relationship, or I'm really curious about what it would be like if you touched my thighs a little gentler. So one really easy way to turn it into a game is I call this just the A-B game. So basically what you do is you have your partner touch you in two different ways. So let's say you're working with your thigh and you have your partner pick two different kinds of stimulation. So maybe one is that they're just gliding their fingertips over your thigh. So have them do that for a few seconds. You take a second to kind of tune into like, okay, do I like that? How does that feel? And then have them do a second type. So maybe this type, it's more of like a massaging kind of thing. There, you know, a lot more pressure there. Have them do that for a few seconds. And then you get a sense, okay, do I like A better or do I like B better? And you can have them go back and forth like, hey, try A for a few more seconds. Wait, okay, now try B for a few more seconds. And then you tell them, you know what? I liked A a lot better. Even if it's just a little bit better. Yeah, I liked A better. And then move on to a different part of your body or ask them, let's stick with my thigh, but now try two more different kinds of strokes. So that way it just feels like you guys are exploring together rather than you having the right answer and your partner keeps getting it wrong. It just makes it feel more open and more playful.
I love that.
I like that too.
Yeah.
I'm going to come home and be like, Anthony, A or B?
Yeah.
I've got two choices. here's a question that kind of I think plays on what we've been discussing is how can we avoid, this is a listener question, how can we avoid just doing the same things, even that we like every time? And I think maybe also like same positions. And another way I'm sure we phrase it all the time is like, how do you spice it up? Or like, how do you even know what positions to try?
Yeah, this is such a great, great question. And I appreciate too that the person said, you know, these are things that we like, because I think that's, you know, that's what makes it so easy to get into a routine is that they are things that we like, but then we just keep doing them over and over again. And then it's really easy to get tired of them. So bunch of different things. I do have a challenge on that I sell on my website that's specifically for this purpose. It's called the 30-Day Sex Challenge. And it's an email-based challenge where every day you get an email with two different ideas of things that you can do in the bedroom with your partner. So I think doing stuff like that can be super fun and playful because it's actually giving you specific ideas of things to do. And there's a kind of element of surprise too, because you don't know until you see the email what that thing is going to be for the day. But you could set something like this up yourself as well. Like, write down what are all the things that you guys like to do in the bedroom together and get as specific and detailed as you can, make as long of a list as you can. And then you could even, you know, print that out, like cut out little strips of paper, fold them up and put it in a jar beside your bed. And maybe it's that you pick one thing out in the morning and then you're going to do it later that night.
Oh,
you know, so again, you're just, you're creating that element of surprise and excitement. You can also create like rules for yourselves. Like you could say, okay, we're never allowed to do the same position three times in a row. You can also make rules about what you are and aren't allowed to do on a certain night. So for heterosexual couples, we really tend to default to doing intercourse. But what if you say, okay, we're not allowed to have intercourse for the next three times that we have sex, or, you know, every Wednesday is no intercourse day, you know, whatever it is. Maybe there are certain days where you're only allowed to touch each other with your hands, or you're only allowed to use your mouths, or you're going to masturbate together. So even though it's obviously artificial, you're putting these rules on yourself. Nobody's really going to go enforce them. It still feels fun to limit yourselves in that way. When we limit ourselves, it actually makes us be more creative.
Well, kind of along those lines, someone asked, I struggle to orgasm with a partner. How can I have a conversation with them about it?
Ah, yes, my other favorite topic to talk about. Female orgasm is my jam. So for orgasming in front of a partner, I am not sure this person's particular background, but my recommendation is always that you have to learn how to get there on your own first. So I work with a lot of women who have never had an orgasm and they just want to skip to learning how to get there with their partner. And so I'm really clear about we have to learn how to experience orgasm on our own first because it's our body. We have to learn what makes our body tick and what our body needs before we can teach that to a partner. So first thing is learning how to get there on your own. And we can definitely go into lots of details about how to do that if you guys want, or if there were any questions about that. Yeah.
Well, we've had listeners reach out. We had a listener reach out a while back who had never had an orgasm on their own or with their partner. And we had a few people, ask about orgasming. And I think this is another area of shame, is that there are a lot of, I mean, we're talking specifically, I think, about women identified people right now who have not had an orgasm and think that they just can't. And would like to, but don't know where to start. So just kind of digging all the way into it, I think would be really helpful.
Yeah. So again, it's one of my favorite topics to talk about. And I think what makes me so passionate about it is that the majority of the resources that you see out there about female orgasm are all really generic. So you hear the same old advice over and over again about, like, just relax, don't think about it, don't try to make it happen. And, you know, we never actually see, like, specific, detailed, you know, step-by-step advice about how to make it happen. And I think that just, this really vague advice really contributes to women feeling even more broken. Like, oh my God, I've tried not to think about it and that doesn't work. What's wrong with me? So it's really important to me to be super practical and nitty gritty about it. And I also have a free video series that I put together, like, all about leading you through, like, my exact step. And I can maybe put together, like, a little special URL for Forever 35 listeners to go check it out, because it definitely will go into a lot more detail than I can do right now, unless you guys want to do, like, a 3-hour long podcast episode, which I'm totally down for. But
wow. I can set that up. Reaching later. Orgasm is very complicated. I love
it. It's not. It's really not. That's another big myth. It's not that complicated. We just need the accurate information. And so that's why I spend a lot of time just going into all the detail, because I just want to combat all of these articles that over and over again are like, just have a glass of wine and don't think about it. So I geek out about female orgasm. I can go a little overboard about it, but I can set that up.
Can you give us a little preview?
Yeah. So I basically boil it down to 4 specific techniques that you want to go through. So first is figuring out whether you like direct or indirect stimulation on your clitoris. So female orgasm is all about the clitoris. That's the main pleasure center for female bodies. And that's, you know, what we need to create stimulation around. And so we need to figure out what kind of stimulation your clitoris likes, whether it's direct or it's indirect. So that's the first step. Then we figure out.
Oh, wait, I have a question.
Yeah,
what is,
yeah.
what is indirect stimulation?
Yeah, great question. So the indirect stimulation can happen in a bunch of different ways. So I wish we were doing a video right now, because I have a little 3D model of the clitoris. Ooh. So basically what most people think of as the clitoris, we think of it as just that little nub of skin that's visible, you know, if you pull your labia apart. So direct stimulation would be you're having direct skin-to-skin contact with your labia. Or sorry, with your clitoris, excuse me. Indirect stimulation would be if you're not directly touching the clitoris. So maybe it's that you have your clitoral hood pulled over the clitoris and you're stroking the hood, but not actually the clitoris itself. Maybe you're stroking to the side of the clitoris, but again, not directly touching it. It could be holding your labia closed over the clitoris, touching over that. And then the reason that I wanted the model is because the clitoris actually extends up into our body. It's a wishbone shape. So it's so much bigger than just that little nub of skin that you see visible, you know, to the human eye. It goes up into your body, splits off into these 2 legs, exactly like a wishbone. And so you can stimulate those legs internally. So you can't touch them directly, but through the walls of the vagina, if you exert some pressure, you can get indirect stimulation that way. So a lot of different ways to get indirect stimulation, but most women tend to like one kind of stimulation over the other. Either they like that direct skin-to-skin contact, or they like the more indirect stimulation.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, no worries. So then next up is getting a sense of what kind of stroke feels good on your clitoris. So again, this is like where I just geek out about getting super nitty gritty about it, because a lot of people are like, okay, so I touch my clitoris, but like, what do I do? Like, how exactly do I touch it? So I go into all different kinds of strokes that you can try. And because I've been doing this so long, I have finishing school, that online course that thousands of women have gone through. I've gathered information about, like, what tend to be the most popular strokes. So I share some of those in that series as well, some of the most common ones. So it's just getting a sense of like, what is the exact stroke that your body tends to respond best to? And then the two final things that we narrow in on are the pressure and the speed that you like. So I usually like to start with pressure first, because that tends to be a bit more sensitive for most women. Some women like really, really, really delicate pressure. You know, the clitoris can be very, very sensitive, and some women, it's like you touch it too hard and I'm like, you know, just it's way too much. And other women like really intense pressure. You know, you really want to be like exerting a lot of force on it. So getting a sense of what kind of pressure feels best. And then once you have an idea of that, honing in on the speed that feels best for you. So experimenting with going a lot slower, going a lot faster, and kind of trying to find what your speed is. So I call it the Goldilocks method for pressure and speed, where you're trying to find like what's too little, what's too much, and what's just right.
And so for people looking to communicate to their partner about their challenges orgasming with a partner, how do you recommend they bring that up?
I think that it's best to have that conversation with a new partner as soon as you can, as soon as you guys are starting to become intimate with each other, wherever that is in your particular timeline. But I think that just setting that expectation right from the get-go can be really, really useful. It can make you so much more at ease, can set your partner at ease, and it just sets the two of you off on a nice foot together. So I think that it's best to just present it really straightforwardly. A lot of times women tell me that they feel very embarrassed having this conversation. It's like they're confessing that they've done something terrible. And so I like to remind them that you haven't done anything wrong. You know, this is completely normal. This happens to everyone. And regardless of your relationship with your orgasm, every time you're with a new partner, you kind of have to relearn like how to, you know, what you like, how your bodies fit together, how you communicate with that partner. So it's, you know, it's something that we have to keep doing as long as we keep having new partners. But I like saying something like, hey, just so you know, I don't orgasm with a new partner right away, but it's not a big deal to me. So you're just being very, you know, straightforward, to the point, but very casual about it. And I've also heard from a lot of partners who really appreciated having that transparency right at the beginning, because it just set them at ease too. It made them feel like they didn't have to magically know exactly what to do to get you off, you know, right from the very get-go. It gave them some space and some permission to like, okay, yeah, we'll figure this out together as we go.
If someone is, quote, a masturbating rookie, as one listener put it, how do they get into a mental and physical space to enjoy doing it?
Ooh, that's a good question. So I would start with recognizing that it's not going to be wildly exciting at first. So this is something that trips up a lot of the women who are in finishing school, is they start these masturbation practices and they're like, I'm not wildly turned on and excited when I'm doing it. But that's totally normal. You know, we have to figure out what our bodies need to get ourselves like really excited and feeling a lot of pleasure. So just recognize that like it's not going to feel crazy amazing right from the get-go, and that's totally okay. Give yourself some time and some space to figure out what it is that your body responds to and what you enjoy. And then you can use the same sort of model that I was talking about earlier, about this, you know, drive mode and reverse mode, about thinking about, you know, what gets you feeling in a space that feels like relaxed and excited and looking forward to this. So the things that put you in reverse, you know, again, it might be some obvious things like you need to have some privacy, you need to have, you need to make sure that you have the time to do it. You don't feel like a time crunch or somebody's going to be coming home in 5 minutes, so you got to do it really quickly, that kind of thing. And then with drive mode, it comes down to us exploring different dynamics that help get us in the mood. So there are lots of different things to try. It could be maybe if you have really good candlelight or, you know, good lighting in your bedroom, that makes you feel like really soothed and relaxed. Maybe you have your favorite playlist of like sexy 90s jams on Spotify, and that helps you, you know, just get into the groove with it. Maybe it's wearing some sort of lingerie or clothing that you feel really good in. It makes you feel confident. Maybe it's watching yourself in the mirror and like watching what you're doing. So there are a lot of different things that we can play with. And it just comes down to like experimenting with each of those and figuring out which ones work for you.
Here's a question that I loved, which is, should bad sex slash kissing be a deal breaker in a new relationship? Can it be fixed?
Ooh, that's a good one. So it depends. It's going to be, for some people, it might be a deal breaker. For others, it might not. And it depends on how bad are we talking about. So let me couch all of that in just saying that I'm a really firm believer that we create great sex, that it's not something that just happens. I think that there's a lot of work that goes into creating a great sex life with your partner and maintaining it in the long term. So I've been with my husband for 12 years. We have a great sex life, and we put a whole lot of work into having a great sex life. We had, at the beginning of our relationship, good enough chemistry for me to be willing to want to do that work. So I think that's kind of, you know, one of the defining things. And it's a tricky line. It's hard to describe, like, what exactly is good enough. So you want to feel like you have the potential to have really good chemistry with a partner, but also this understanding of, if we work together to explore our own likes, to communicate about what we like, to continue prioritizing it, you know, we will create a sex life that feels a lot better. But, you know, if it's like just really, really bad, maybe it's not something that can be overcome. But in general, I've found that a lot of things can be overcome if you're willing to talk about it.
Can we talk about vibrators?
Yeah.
Do sure. you like them? Do you recommend them? Do you have, I know there's no one size fits all vibrator slash I know we could be talking about, like, I get a little confused, like a dildo is not, and also this is just, I mean, this is for people who want a vibrator anyway. I'm getting overwhelmed myself. This is classic me. But, like, do you recommend vibrators for people? Do you have one that you love? Is there a good, like, starter vibe for someone just looking to, you know, have a daily orgasm?
Yeah. So I love vibrators. I think they're awesome. I think technology is amazing, and it's helping us do amazing things in the bedroom too. I do think that we all need to be thoughtful about the role that we want vibrators to play in our sex lives. So I do not believe that you can get addicted to a vibrator. I think that's just like crazy, weird fear mongering that gets thrown out there. But I do think that what we can get used to is just the ease at which a vibrator can deliver an orgasm. And so I work with a lot of women who exclusively use vibrators, and then they want to learn how to orgasm in other ways, but they get really frustrated because it's like, I can get myself off with my vibrator in 30 seconds. And now if I'm trying to use my hand or my partner's trying to use their hand, you know, it's feeling like it takes 20, 30, 40 minutes. So we just have to think about, you know, do you want to use your vibrator almost exclusively for the majority of your orgasms? That's awesome. Go for it. If you want to learn how to have orgasms in other ways, then spend a little bit of time orgasming, you know, learning on how to orgasm in other ways as well. In terms of vibrators, so, okay, this breaks my heart a little bit because I have an absolute favorite vibrator that I love so much. And I think it's the perfect vibrator for women who have never used a vibrator before. But they really consistently have manufacturing issues, and they keep going in and out of being available. So I recommend it, and then people get really upset because they're like, it's not in stock right now, and they don't know when it's going to be back in stock. But I just love it so much that I can't help myself from recommending it. So it is by this company called Minna Life, M-I-N-N-A. And there are actually two of them. My personal favorite is the Limon. It looks like a little lemon. So you hold it in your hand. And the other one is called the Ola, and that's a longer wand-style vibrator. And the reason that I like both of these so much is they have this patented squeeze technology. So basically, the harder you squeeze the vibrator, the harder the vibrations go. And the more you let up on it, the lighter the vibrations get. So I really like that, especially for beginners, because it's really intuitive. I often find that other vibrators, you have to use like a little, you know, buttons or even like a little knobs or dials to adjust the vibration. And it just gets really distracting. And you're having to stop yourself in the moment to turn it down or turn it up. And I just don't really love that. But I love that with the Minna Life vibrators, it's just squeezing a little bit harder or letting go of the thing. And that changes that. So I'm sorry if it's not available right now, but I highly recommend it. They're just so great.
looking at them both right now.
Yeah.
So if someone wants to become a sex therapist, how would they do that?
Ooh, that's a great question. So the really interesting thing about sex therapy is that it's not regulated in the same sort of way that like psychotherapy is or that doctors are. So there's not a standardized education that you need to get to be a sex therapist. So it makes it really difficult to pursue this career because you don't know exactly what you're supposed to be doing. So in general, I get a lot of people who reach out to me and ask about this, and I generally recommend that you start with graduate school for psychotherapy and become a licensed psychotherapist and then pursue some sort of postgraduate training in sexuality. The reason for that is that I just think sex is such a complex issue and so many big things can come up that I really think it's so useful to have a background in counseling and how you work with people with really big emotions and, you know, experiences and traumas and all of that kind of thing. So I find that to be super, super useful. I don't do a ton of psychotherapy myself anymore these days, but I rely on that training every single day. So that's generally what I would recommend, is just get that foundation so that you can really be able to serve your clients when big stuff comes up for them.
That makes a lot of sense. What's the job market like for sex therapists?
I think that it is going to get very, very big very soon. I think that people are we're getting more used to the idea of like life coaching So I think that sex therapy as coaching is going to become a lot more popular. I especially think the online courses area is going to really explode. So I think it's just such a good fit for sex related stuff because you have the comfort and privacy of your own home, but you can get really practical, actionable, solutions and strategies for working on your sex life. So I do think that there's, really big potential for growth here. And I'd love to see more people just coming into the field because everybody has sex issues of one kind or another. And I think we need more people out there to help us all work through this.
Do you have, I'm assuming a question that you might get a lot is someone bringing up an issue like, I have sex this many times a week, or my partner and I do this, or I want this, followed by, is this normal? And I'm wondering, is there any baseline for normal when it comes to sex, or is everything, are we all okay where we are, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I don't think there's any such thing as normal when it comes to sex. And I don't think it's even a useful question for us to ask ourselves. I think that there are so many different ways to have sex and to relate to sex. And I think that they're all okay. So yeah, we're all going to have our own challenges, our own stories, our own histories, all of that. But I think that, trying to measure ourselves up to, how often are my neighbors having sex and what kind of sex do they have and all that? It's just, it's just not useful. So instead, I think it's a lot better for us to get curious about ourselves? Like, do I enjoy the kind of sex that I'm having? Is there something that I want that I haven't been allowing myself to ask for or to try to experience? Is there a way that I want to connect with my partner that I'm not doing? Looking at it just through our own lens. But yeah, I think we're all okay where we all are, and we can all just get curious about what that place is and if it's something that's really serving us and making us feel good.
Well, this has been a blast to get to talk to you, Vanessa.
Oh, it's been so much fun for me too. There have been some great questions.
Well, we are a bunch of people who want to have more sex.
More and better.
More and better, yeah. Right? There's always room for more and better.
Vanessa, where can people find you and where can they take these online courses?
So they can find me at vmtherapy.com, and I'll set up a little page at vmtherapy.com/forever35 with some of the stuff that we talked about today and that I think might be useful for your listeners. But yeah, you can check me out over there. And I'm also super active on Instagram at Vanessa Marin Therapy. I do daily stories where I talk about different tips and strategies and suggestions and answer reader questions and all that fun stuff.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
felt very like I had bad sex education when I was talking to Vanessa.
You mean you're realizing that the education you had as a youth was bad?
Yeah. Just, I feel like people's sexual literacy is low.
Well, that's, I mean, that is a whole conversation we could be having about how we're talking to our children, each other.
It's like, I mean, porn is great, but porn is not sexual literacy.
No. Porn is great, though, you think?
I think, like, porn can be great. All right.
Well, okay.
Kate.
Dory.
Did you dance like no one was watching?
I mean, yes, I did. I rocked so hard that the next day I had to take a 3-hour nap and then I went to bed at 9:45 at night.
But you know, I was actually thinking about this. You might have had a little altitude sickness.
Oh.
You might have been dehydrated.
I was, can I tell you? I've been meaning to text you this. This is hashtag not an ad. I was pounding our friend Liquid IV.
Oh, okay.
At every corner.
Okay.
Putting into water bottles the whole time I was in Colorado.
Okay.
At Fish, I would, sitting on the ground, opening up my little packets.
Okay.
So I tried so hard to hydrate, but it is possible that I did have a little bit of that old altitude sickness.
Yeah, you might have.
Yeah, because I was wiped out.
Aww.
I mean, it's fine, but I was like, it felt like a migraine was starting a little bit. But then, you know, lots of napping, lots of sleeping. Lots of dancing.
Lots of dancing. What's your intention for this week?
I have to make appointments.
Mm.
I hit it out of the park with making that mammogram appointment.
Yeah.
But there are so many other appointments that need to be made.
Okay.
I got to go to the foot doctor. I got to get my hair cut. I got to make a dentist appointment. I mean, I just have
some like life maintenance.
I just have them sitting there on my to-do list. And every day I'm like, uh-huh. And then I just don't do it. So I just got to make the appointments.
Okay.
I'm going to do it though. How about you? Your intention was to not stress about traveling.
Yeah, I did okay with that. Matt and I only got in like one fight as we were packing up the car that he actually de-escalated.
Good work.
Which I was like, oh, therapy works.
Does work. Was it just one of those like bickering, like kind of fights?
He's been making these shakes and he had like, it looked like he had made a shake and just like left all this like powder on the kitchen counter. We've had ants. And I was just like, what the fuck, Matt? Like, can't you clean up after yourself? And I was like, you know, you're like talking to yourself and like, I'm like cleaning. And because he had been like, let's get the car seat, like, let's go. And so I was like, okay, he's ready to go. He's obviously not cleaning up this mess. And so I cleaned it up and then he came back in the house and I was like, don't worry, I cleaned up your mess or something along those lines.
How sassy of you.
It was pretty sassy. And he got so mad. He was like, I wasn't done. I was going to do it. And he was like, what have you been doing? And I was like, fuck you. Like, I packed all of Henry's stuff. I packed everything. Like, don't you dare. And then he was like, wait, why are we yelling at each other? And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, you're right.
Wow.
He's like, let's not do this. We don't need to yell. I'm sorry.
And did you also apologize?
I just said apology accepted.
Ah, Dory!
I'm such an asshole.
I wouldn't say that you are an asshole. It sounds like in the situation you were both frustrated, but perhaps you were coming from it the place of needing the apology. You had done a bunch of stuff. And
I think I often feel like, and this is a huge tangent that we could probably talk about for hours, but I feel like because Matt's love language is acts of service, he likes to see himself as the person who is always doing things for other people. And so sometimes it feels like he doesn't notice when I do things and that my labor is invisible. And so to me, it felt like I made a huge list for Henry of all the stuff he needed. I packed all his stuff. It was like a lot of work, both mentally and like actually. And for him to just be like, you didn't do anything was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Like, no.
What's on your plate for this week?
So we kind of touched on this earlier in the show, but I want to clean my office space in particular so that it's more conducive to doing work.
Okay. Because you've got work to do.
I have work to do. And I just feel like I've been like avoiding working at my desk because it doesn't feel like a peaceful, clean space. And by clean, I mean both like I need it to feel like mentally clean and actually clean.
Mm-hmm.
And also clean off the dining room table, which I started before you came over, and I made a dent. But as we discussed, it's not just the one-time cleaning, it's the maintenance. So if I clean off the dining room table today and then tomorrow it's cluttered again, what's the point? So kind of staying on top of it.
It's hard. Again. It is. Teach us, listeners.
Please.
Please guide us through this. We don't know how to stay on top of our mess.
Yeah. We can do it. We're like, we are fully functioning grown-ups.
Most of the time.
I know, but like, this shouldn't be this hard.
But it is, I think it's valid that it is this hard.
Yeah.
I feel like that's something that oftentimes people who are overwhelmed by mess and don't have the innate ability to be organized say to themselves, like it kind of to shame yourself, like this shouldn't be that hard. Anybody can pick this up. But I think it is a challenge.
Yeah.
And a real one. And it's part cultural of just having a lot of stuff and part like I don't know if I ever fully learned how to stay organized.
Yeah.
And also just how my brain is not geared toward, I don't think it's something that we should just know how to do because we are fully functioning adults.
Kate.
Take that.
You just reframed the narrative for me.
Don't be hard on yourself for it. Okay. I think there it's more challenging than we give it credit for. I don't know.
That is really interesting. I appreciate that perspective.
Well,
and I'm going to think about it.
Thank you. I hope you do.
No, thank you.
Well, you are welcome.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I think that brings us to the end of this here show.
I think this is a good place to stop.
I do too.
But if you would like to chime in with questions or comments or tips, you can reach us by leaving a voicemail at 781-591-0390 or emailing us at forever35podcast@gmail.com.
And you can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/forever35podcast. And the password there is serums.
And if you like this here little podcast, please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, tell a friend, or mention us on whatever social media outlet you prefer. Just don't at Dory on Twitter because she's not checking it.
And a reminder that everything we mention on the show is always on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram at forever35podcast and on Twitter at forever35pod.
And Forever 35 is hosted and produced by Dory Shafrir and Kate Spencer and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. And Lane Hammer is our assistant. And we appreciate you. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye.